Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Tech Talk here on RNIB Connect Radio. I'm Hubert Pavelkovich in for Callum Stoneman this week. And as always, this is your technology show. It's all about the technology you find fascinating, frustrating, interesting, and very helpful too. Accessible, mid-accessible, or inaccessible. We want to hear about it because that's what it's all about. If you've got questions, suggestions, or anything else you would like to tell us, well, you can. The email address to get in touch with the show is techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That is techtalk at rnib.org.uk. Right, coming up this week, we'll be finding out about a brand new game available on the Nintendo Switch device range, which is fully accessible, a game called Rhythm Heaven Groove. I'll be speaking to RNIB's accessible gaming officer, Silas Combat, to find out a little bit more about that. We will also be having David Hogg will be popping around to talk beta testing. Yes, beta testing the latest operating system for iPhones and iPads, iOS and iPadOS 27. We'll be chatting a little bit about our thoughts on that. Plus, we will be exploring another tech timeline. Plenty of things coming up. Right, I've got my co-hosts with me today, Jackie Brown and Natalie Curran. Join me. Jackie, what's new with you?
Well, Google had their Pixel, I think it's fair to say, event this week, a few days ago, as we are recording. And the upshot is that they are revealing for pre-order some new phones, of course. The Pixel 11 Pro, the Pixel 11, there is also a Pixel 11 Fold. And there is a Pixel Watch 5 and a Pixel Tag. Now, the Tag is, of all those things, interesting to me because I haven't seen a Google Tag before. Now, whether this is their first foray into the Tag market, I don't know. But you can order one of these for $29.99, which is roughly the same as the iPhone tag, the AirTag, but obviously the Pixel tag, I'm assuming, will work with Android devices across the board. Now, I don't know this for definite. I'm going to look into it and find out. I know the AirTag you can only use on an iPhone or an iPad, so it'll be interesting to compare these and see how easy it is to set it up. But you have the Pixel 11 phone. I think it starts from just over £800. So, you know, it's a considered purchase. They all are. The Pixel 10a was released earlier this year, and that is actually quite a good buy if anybody is looking to dip their toe in the Android market, or if you want another Android phone, then the Pixel 10a is available, and I think it's just over £400, so it's a good deal cheaper than the Pixel 11, but that's the lineup from Google as of this week.
That's always quite interesting, the things they kind of come up with. I like the sound of the Google tag, because I was wondering when Google kind of released their own version of an item tracker.
I was interested when you said, Jackie, about the Pixel Fold, so I thought, does that mean it's a collapsible phone or a folding phone?
Yeah.
Do you remember it being the height of cool was to have a slide up phone or a flip phone?
I had one of them.
Yeah.
And one of the things I really don't like about the iPhone range now, and why I'm clinging onto my current phone so desperately, is because they're so big. Yeah. And if you can't see the screen, you don't need a big screen. And if you've got relatively small hands, you can't hold it in one hand sometimes. I had the iPhone 10 before the 13 mini, and I'd have to adjust my grip if I was texting with one hand in order for my thumb to reach the other side of the keyboard.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is ridiculous. It's a phone.
Yeah. That's why I think they call them, sometimes they call them phablets, the bigger ones, you know, because
Yeah,
you
you
can
try
get
one
the
of the plus
ordinary.
models. Ooh, they're big.
Yeah, they are big. My son has a Samsung phone, and he's got the Ultra, not the latest Samsung in the S series, but he has got a fairly recent model, and it is really big. I mean, even compared to my iPhone, it's big. And I can understand that because obviously, well, he's in IT at his work, and also he has to take pictures sometimes of something that's wrong, so he, you know, can take screenshots and all this kind of thing, and that's great. But I mean, for a blind person, really, I just think they're too big.
Am I the only one that doesn't really see the appeal of a foldable phone?
No, I don't either, but to be honest, and certainly the price is not appealing. I mean, I think the Pixel foldable, the Pixel 11 foldable, I think it's nearly £1,800. And that's entry level. You know, you could probably go up further than that with more storage.
Can buy a couple of good laptops for that.
Was gonna say, you could
Yeah,
indeed.
I know.
You're almost into Braille display territory there.
I mean, you
Yeah.
kind of are. There are Braille displays for that amount, so it's not almost. You're actually there. Natalie, what's new with you?
Well, I thought it was interesting, Hubert, that in your intro you mentioned the word frustration, because I was at the height of frustration last
Not
night.
smashing
Not
up
the
the TVs
TV
again, are
again.
you?
It's a growing list. Maybe you should have like an endangered species list.
What technology has Natalie smashed this week?
Again, no technology was harmed in the process of this recording. So, Copilot, M365 Copilot. So, I've had this once or twice where, and I have to say, it does take a lot for it to get to this stage, but if I use a chat for a long time, so say I'm building on it, in this case, it's been a project I've been working on for several months. So it's good to have that running commentary because I don't need to keep retelling it what I've done before. I can say, you know, this has happened, so now we're doing this, or that's happened, so now I'm doing that, and kind of build on it that way. But when I've done this before, there's come a point where I think the chat has just become too big. So it starts crashing. You know, it'll say, I can't do that, try again. And I've literally just said to it, hello. And I'll say, I can't do that, try again. So I thought, okay, this isn't working. Now, because I've been working on this for several months, I thought, I don't want to lose this. So I'm going to try, and I've tried it once before, I'm going to try creating a notebook from it. So in M365 Copilot, there's a little option beside your chat that says more. And in that, you have rename, delete, and add to notebook. And I used it to create a new notebook with this chat inside it. Now, as I understood it, the notebook kind of becomes your workspace. So you can upload references, you can upload files, you can have different chat windows if you want open for various streams, perhaps. I don't know why you necessarily want that, but that's a feature. I couldn't for the life of me get it to work. I was in the notebook, in the chat window, and I, as a test, I'd uploaded like a summary page as a reference page. And I said, can you review the summary page? Nope, can't see that. And I tried adding the notebook, but I couldn't find it. Eventually, I tracked it down to, it's not a file, it's in the iCloud, not, is it iCloud? File options. So, no, it won't be iCloud, it'll be cloud, sorry. So, you know, in the chat, normal chat window, you have the option to add more content, and it's upload images, files. And one of the options is cloud content. I found the notebook I wanted in there, but I couldn't select it. I couldn't upload it. I couldn't do anything with it. And I went round and round in circles to the point where Copilot itself told me, I think you should stop.
Oh dear! I think you know when a co
Oh,
if a co if Copilot's telling you to stop, you kind of go.
you
Things have
need,
gone.
yeah.
I
I
mean,
said, I will not be defeated, but I was defeated. I gave up.
I always find Copilot probably one of the most complex
It is,
assistants ever. I've
yeah.
used Geminis. I've used your Chat GPTs. I've used even Siri AI in my testing of iOS 27. But I always found Copilot so unintuitive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can never find, if you ask it a question, and you sort of go through the motions of, maybe you want it to create a document or a summary or something. You've really got to dig through all the guff to actually get the answer or to the bit that you want. I personally don't find what I've used it for very intuitive.
And Copilot in general, I find it like I've asked it once. I thought Copilot being a Microsoft product, and I'm signed in. I thought it would be intuitive enough to do this. I said it to it once. Look at my calendar and give me a summary of availability for the next week, which I can forward to a potential guest to interview. It said, "I can't access your calendar," and I went, "But you're a Microsoft product, and I'm signed in. What? I, why?"
Well, I had it even weirder than that, Hubert. So I was getting notifications on my work phone saying, suggestion, give you the top three to do things that you need to do today. And I was like, and it got to the point where I thought, fine, just tell me what I need to do today. Just go away. So it dug through my emails and my calendar, and it said, I think you need to do this, this, and this. It was wrong, but I thought, at least you stopped nagging me. But I then went on to my laptop. Now, bearing in mind it's the same account and I could see that very same chat in the list on my laptop, I tried to do exactly something like that that you described there, Hubert. I said, give me a summary of calendar or who sent me this email. I can't remember the person who sent it. Something of that ilk. And it was like, nope, can't access that. I was like, you just did it.
Yeah.
So, a warning to all.
Quick update from me. So Google have launched a kind of an accessibility community of sorts where you can kind of share ideas, insights, and collaborate with other users of Google's accessibility features on Google's products, which I thought was quite interesting because usually, I know Apple has obviously Apple Vis, but that's not created by Apple as such. It's been created by someone else and then now owned by Be My Eyes. And you've got accessible Android, of course, as well. But Google have launched their own accessibility hub community kind of page where you can go to. So if you go to support.google.com/accessibility, you'll be able to take a look at that and see what's available. I've not looked at it too much yet, but I think it's nice that the companies themselves are actually launching accessibility hubs where people can kind of connect together and get help, insights, or advice. I think that's quite nice.
Well, Google have been upping their game, I think, for a number of years
Yeah,
now,
they have.
because they're very proud of their empathy labs. Don't know if you guys have heard of these. They've got one in London, which actually I have visited, and they've got one in Dubai, of all places. And I think they're sort of popping up everywhere. And you can arrange to go in and have a look, and it's a whole variety of things. So I think the thing that I remember from my visit most was somebody playing a game of something equivalent to FIFA, a football-based online game. But they were using a mouse stick to do it. So it's obviously designed for people who have limited or no arm function. And it was very impressive. So they have a real diverse range of stuff there. So it's also something they're considering. And I dare say Apple is posing a bit of a challenge for them that they're trying to meet.
Plenty of things there. A packed show coming up today, as always. Well, stick around. It's another Tech Talk. You are listening to RNIB Connect Radio, and it's time to talk gaming. And it's time to talk Nintendo Switch, a gaming console which you don't often hear about in regards to accessibility, but we're about to change that because joining me, we do have someone at RNIB who knows one or two things about games. It's RNIB's Accessible Gaming Officer, Mr. Sightless Combat. How are we, sir?
Doing well, thank you, and great to be back. Always good to be able to chat about new, accessible, interesting things.
Can you tell us, for those that don't know, what is a Nintendo Switch?
So, a Nintendo Switch is an interesting sort of hybrid console, I guess is the best way to term it. So, you've got things like your PlayStation 5s, your Xboxes, where they're these big designed to not be portable devices, I think is a good way to look at it. These devices are designed to just sit there, play games, and that's it. And they don't move really from where they're put. And then by contrast, you've got things like, smartphones or handhelds like the ROG Ally, the ROG Ally, things like that, and the Steam Deck as well, which are very much designed to play sometimes the same games, sometimes similar games, in a handheld factor where you can just shove it in a bag and go and play, like on the bus, on the plane, whatever, on a long train journey to the middle of nowhere. Who knows? The Switch is basically a combination of that because you can either have it in docked mode where you have a little dock and it plugs into your TV or monitor or whatever of choice, capture card, and you can play it like that, or you can play it in handheld mode. So you can take the entire thing out of the dock with the Joy-Cons, the little controllers that attach to the sides, either attached or detached from the console, and play it completely separately without needing, any sort of TVs or things plugged into it as well. So yeah, very much an interesting hybrid that's been around since, 2017, I think was the release of the first one, to much success, even though it wasn't as accessible as it could have been. And then of course the Switch 2 came, sort of last year, and that has extra accessibility, which we'll come on to in a minute.
Can you tell me, how accessible is a Nintendo Switch in terms of, accessibility with magnification, but also screen readers and things like that?
I can't personally speak to the magnification side of it, given I have no sight whatsoever. But what I can speak to is the screen reader, or in the case of the original Switch, the lack of screen reader. So I'd heard of people using optical character recognition, or via capture cards and things, where basically you're taking pictures of the screen and recognizing text from there. I've heard of people doing that with varying degrees of success. But the Switch 2, which, as I said, arrived in relatively recent times and is getting a European revision for battery replacement regulations later this year and into next year. The Switch 2 has a screen reader that you can enable during the on the transfer screen. So when you first set your Switch 2 up, you'll see a Wi-Fi screen and it'll tell you to download a system update. Sadly, those screens are not accessible as of this recording. I wish they were. Arguably, it should be. But it may just be because the screen reader isn't on the sort of version of the system software that the consoles come with, or something to that effect. But once you've got it set up on the transfer screen, you can then use your Switch 2, without needing assistance for some tasks. Things like the shop don't read yet, the eShop on the console don't read yet, but there are ways around that as well in the form of using the website to then purchase your games and things like that. But the main home screen does read your settings read as well, so you can configure your Switch to your liking, as it were. And it does include speed controls as well, which is very useful to see, amongst other things. And you can change the voice too, which is brilliant.
Going off of that, availability of accessible titles on the Switch, how has it been up until the title we are going to discuss next?
Up until that title, you could argue that the accessibility wasn't really that different to, most platforms, in that there are things that are unintentionally potentially accessible depending on how much patience you've got, and there are titles that have come across from other platforms that are then available on Switch as well. So there's a couple of, there's an audio-only title I can think of that's available on the Switch that is accessible by nature of being, sort of audio led, and things like that. And then you've got stuff like Mortal Kombat 1, which I believe should work on Switch, but I haven't tried it myself. I'd heard sort of mixed things about how good that port actually was, but that's not for here. So the accessibility is pretty much what you'd expect, i.e. a mixed bag, up until relatively recently, let's say. And we'll come on to why in just a second.
Before we talk about the accessibility side of this title, let's find out more about the game itself. Tell me about Rhythm Heaven Groove.
Yep, so Rhythm Heaven Groove, or Rhythm Paradise Groove, depending on where you live. They've been, well, Rhythm Heaven is a series that's been around since 2006, with a Japanese release actually called Rhythm Tengoku. I may be butchering the pronunciation there, but it's been around for a long time, 20 years this year. It's been in English a bunch of times since then. And the last Rhythm Heaven game was 11 years ago, with 2015 being the last time we'd seen a release for the series. And what these games are is they are a collection of mini games, and so, like, various smaller games, and then with these things called remixes, whereby you'll play four mini games, clear all of those, and then you'll get a remix, which is a combination of those four mini games in a different format with a different song and that kind of stuff. So you're playing along two songs, not sort of previously licensed songs or anything. They are created for the game, as I understand it. But you're doing all sorts of strange tasks. Like, I remember in one of the older games, you were hitting birds backwards and forwards in a badminton style minigame. Very, very strange. Or skewering food on a fork, or doing what was called in the minigame power calligraphy, which is a rather unusual one. So all these unusual, odd, quirky tasks with all these brilliant little characters. And up until now, these games have been technically playable, is probably a good way to describe it. As in, if you had the patience, if you knew how the menus worked, if you had optical character recognition, you could get through these games and play most of them, if not all of them. And you'll have, different extra modes alongside these columns of games as well that would sometimes be accessible too. But up until now, the accessibility of this hadn't really necessarily been a thing that was available in games, in games and in the game directly.
Tell me about the latest title. What is it like? What's new with this one before we dive into the accessibility?
I mean, arguably, they're both kind of the same question. The big new thing for this title is the accessibility in a way. And it was funny because it happens kind of, there is a history to accessibility in Rhythm Heaven, in the sense that several years ago, a blind Nintendo fan sent a message to Nintendo thanking them for a series that they've been able to enjoy alongside their friends and be, really good at and things like that. And the company responded in both Japanese and in Braille, which was the first I'd heard of, that the company communicating, in Braille or in, around accessibility generally. I remember seeing the story and being like, wow, this is great. Fast forward to March of last year, and I think it was around March of last year when Nintendo did one of their famous direct presentations where they show a bunch of games off. Nobody, I think, expected it, but they showed a trailer for what was then a new game. We didn't know what it was. And it had narration in the trailer, which was uncharacteristic and surprising in the best way possible, because it was reading the text on the screen. So it was like, hello, nice to meet you, whatever the text was saying on screen. It was like, let's play a mini game or whatever. And it was reading all of that. And there was speculation as to why is this happening? What is this? Is this just part of the trailer? Is this, added on? Is this just one of these AI voices that they've just put in, as a part of this? We weren't sure what was going on. And then cut to relatively recently when the demo came out for this game, and we were able to get hands on, myself and others were able to get hands on with this on both Switch 1 and 2 hardware, and we realized that no, this isn't fake or added on or anything. This is an actual, in-game character as well, narrating everything, the menus, the tutorials, even providing audio description in what I've described in my recently released review as light detail, but we might come onto that in a minute. But it's audio description nonetheless in a Nintendo game. And it we were really I mean, I know I was really excited for it. Other people were as well. So to be able to see that happen was massive. And the games, they are a little less eccentric than they, or they seem a little less eccentric than some of them in previous entries, but I don't mind because I get to play a Rhythm Heaven game and not need help with it, which is absolutely huge in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, okay, if you lower on the eccentric side, but you can actually play them, that to me is more important. So we've discussed narration, it has that, which is absolutely fantastic, and I always love that in games. But what other accessibility features are there to make, the mini games playable and in general more playable game?
So there's only There's not much in the way of actual like settings or anything to go through. It's not one of these games where you configure 60 different settings and you get a custom experience. Which is unfortunate because there are definitely elements that would be good to see. One thing I did notice though, for those that are struggling in terms of seeing, understanding what to do in terms of hitting cues and things for individual games, is you can hold Y or the Y button during tutorials, and you can see these examples in the game live, and you can then release and try it yourself. It would be fantastic if that were a toggle instead of a hold, so that those who, might struggle to hold down a button might be able to then see these examples without having to constantly hold it down. But the fact that it's there at all, that's kind of the big thing to acknowledge. This is kind of the first big step on the sort of Nintendo accessibility journey, I would say. And the fact that the character I mentioned earlier, who narrates everything, known as Little Miss Reads, which is a brilliant pun, because if you look at the text that accompanies her, it says, "Oh, sometimes she makes mistakes," as in Little Miss Reads, which I thought was brilliant
I like
when
that. That's
when I
clever.
realized it. It's a shame though, because that name is only mentioned in passing. So in a trailer they released before the game came out, like really quite recently, they actually had her introduce herself. That introduction is not present in the game, which is unfortunate, at least not currently. But having that be a character is in a way a different way of immersion, because then it gets other people into seeing the feature, that might not look at it otherwise. And even when you try and turn the narration off, apparently Little Miss Reads looks very sad when you try and do so. Loads of people have commented on that. But what I'm kind of sad about is that there are less accessibility features for, like, timing and that kind of thing. You literally just have a calibration set up and that's it. And even then, that's not necessarily reliable, because playing in docked mode versus handheld mode is such a diversely different experience, which is really frustrating to see. But here's hoping they can patch that at some point in the future. That'd be great to see.
Well, I think it's a great starting point, and especially that we're not talking small companies here. We're talking Nintendo themselves. They are, huge in the gaming industry, and for them to release a very much accessible title is incredibly important. I do like that, and I do like the character actually narrating it. I think it adds, makes it extra special because it makes the game more real. You feel more immersed in it because you've got a character in the actual game narrating it. So it adds that extra layer to me. Now, you've mentioned audio descriptions as well. How good or how helpful are the audio descriptions in the game?
So to talk about this, I think we need to give a little comparison here. So you may remember, and you may have heard of, a little game called Bits and Bops that released in December of 2025. A good, well, great example, I should say, of accessibility in a rhythm game, because not only did it add, various sort of screen reader level elements in general, your menu narration, that kind of thing, it also added audio description. And the best thing about it is that it gives a load of detail. So it's, the scene opens, on the left-hand side of the frame, there's this, the right-hand side of the frame, there's that, this other thing is sitting over there. And it gives all of this detail. By contrast, Rhythm Heaven's AD, such as it is, so there's a mode called Beat Spell, which is an RPG external to the solo mini games that you play and you go through the columns, like I said before. It's a separate mode, but you have to clear and get better at the standard mini games to be able to progress in Beat Spell. Now, with Beat Spell, there are lots of enemies that you go through and fight as this part of rhythm-based RPG. And unfortunately, most of the time you will just get, here's what's happening as the first prompt. Oh, well, here's what's happening. There is a monster in front of you. And that's it. And it's slightly frustrating because for some of the boss enemies, there is a little more description, but not much. And I wonder, I don't know why that is necessarily, why there's a lack of description for those. But here's hoping that can be improved. But the fact that it's there at all is, I think, the big thing. You've got this in-universe character narrating all of this, with a kind of text-to-speech style voice. Which is fine because it can then read dynamic content as well, like, scores and player names in multiplayer, that kind of thing as well, because there is multiplayer with this as well, which I haven't tested a lot of, but I have looked at it and it does seem to work, other than one menu that doesn't read, which is the color menu for your multiplayer. But in terms of audio description, the fact that a Nintendo game has anything at all, so you understand, oh, here's what's going on in this cutscene in a loose format, is brilliant anyway. But if I really hope Nintendo get the resources to patch this and update it to the level of polish that I think they would want to see if they were if they were indeed fully aware of the scope of the lack of information, which they may not be. I'm not saying they are, I'm not saying they're not, but they might be unaware of the lack of detail that's there compared to other offerings.
As you say, I think having it there versus not having it at all, even if it's not perfect, is the more important thing, because it doesn't have to be perfect for it to be progressive, I would say.
Exactly. Accessibility is a journey, and a journey, might take a while, but every step in the right direction is progression. And we've gone from no accessibility directly in most titles, I would say, if not all, arguably, to having a fully accessible, massive minigame collection. It is, there are so many minigames and other things. I'm trying to be careful not to spoil stuff here. There's so many minigames and various other elements to it that come into it that are really well put together. And the fact that I can just go through, I could literally pick my Switch 2 up now, play a few minigames, and leave it alone for a few days and then come back and still, get into it. That in itself is brilliant, and it's long overdue, but the fact that it's happened at all is fantastic.
For those that would like to take advantage of this game, obviously you do need a Nintendo Switch, probably a Nintendo Switch 2, because that has the screen reader. Now,
Yes.
how can you then, A, how can you get this game? B, what are the costs involved?
So this is where it gets a little interesting. I haven't done this myself, but you can download games via the eShop, via the online store on via your web browser. I haven't done that. I did do it with the demo though, and the demo is free, of course, and is still available as of the time of this recording. So you can go ahead, if you have a Switch 2 or a Switch, and you have the facilities to do it, you can go and download the demo and give it a try, which is a really good idea for two reasons. One, because it's an entire stage, an entire column, if you will, of games, including a remix and a multiplayer game, should you have either people or want to test it out yourself, because you can play multiplayer games solo if you set things up correctly. I won't go into that here. But also, the reason it's good is because if you do decide to go for and have a look at the demo, you can actually save your progress, well, have your progress saved on the Switch, so it'll do it on its own, and have it carry over to the full game should you decide to get hold of it. And as much as you can download it on the eShop and have that all work, I actually decided, because I had the choice, I decided to buy the game physically. The reason I felt like I had the choice is because both the physical and digital versions cost the exact same, which is absolutely wonderful in this day and age. And that cost, UK wise, is £33.99, which is, I mean, I still am amazed to think that. I was thinking, oh, wow, this is going to be, a £50 game, £60 game, whatever. But when I saw £33.99 pop up on my browser when I looked, I was like, I'm definitely ordering this. There is not like a world in which I wouldn't want to order this. And I bought the cartridge. I got it on day one. You can buy it from other retailers as well, I should say. I bought it actually cheaper than 33 from a different retailer, because we had discounts and things, and that was fine. But I got a physical copy and was so glad that I did. In the States, if you're in the States, I did look this up as well for just to see the equivalence, and it is a $40 game, which for what you get, I would say is really good. Physically, I would suggest getting it, because then it's just a lot easier to work with, because you literally just insert the cartridge and press run, basically press confirm on the game as it pops up on your screen. And if it needs any updates, I'm sure it would download those. But for me, there were no updates at launch. It had either it had updated itself in the background or, I had launched it and there were no updates needed.
That is fantastic news, and it's great to hear as well about Nintendo releasing that sort of, fully accessible title. I think it's long overdue, but it's great to see. So if you end up playing this, do let us know your thoughts. I'll tell you how to get in touch. But if people would like to find out more about accessible gaming or about yourself and what you do, how can they do that?
Yep, so they can find me. You can all find me as Sightless Combat. So that is SIGHTLESSKOMBAT. That's on, Twitter, Blue Sky, Twitch, YouTube, where I will stream Rhythm Heaven and create content around it. And you can also email hello@sightlesscombat.com should you wish. And if you want to find out what RNIB are doing, given I am RNIB's accessible gaming officer, you can do so by emailing gaming@rnib.org.uk or type in RNIB DFEG in your search bar of choice. And finally, if you want to look at my website and including finding my Rhythm Heaven review, which I mentioned earlier, which goes into a fair amount more detail as to my experience, you can do so at www.sightlesscombat.com and then find the reviews page from there.
Fantastic. And if you want to let us know your thoughts on Rhythm Heaven Groove or any other games you end up trying, do let us know. It's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. For now, though, Mr. Sightless Combat, thank you very much for talking to us here on RNIB Connect Radio. Now, on RNIB Tech Talk, it's time to do what I really enjoy doing, and that's explore someone's tech timeline, find out what technology has made a big difference in their life. What's currently making a difference, and talk about the future of tech, which is always endless. Joining me today, we've had Mo on Tech Talk before talking about Beyond Horizons, but he's back to tell us about his tech timeline. Mo, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. It's an absolute pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
So the first question I'll start with is, what was your first piece of assistive technology that you had?
I got my first computer when I was eight, I think 8 or 9. It was a ZX Spectrum. They didn't really have much speed, so it was like computer that you boot up. It boots up into BASIC and start programming. And the thing about the Sinclair Spectrum is that instead of typing all the words, what they did is they made these they gave this like a like a, you have the shift key and the control key and the alt key. So you had this similar kind of thing called caps key and symbol key, and then a combination of these. If you press that with a particular letter, it actually gave you the word that you wanted to write in your program. So, for example, if you want to write print quotation mark hello world, yeah, you press the symbol key and shift key, and then press P, and it'll just say print. So it kind of has got all the words, the keywords of the programming basic language, actually written on the keyboard. I guess it was on a Commodore 64. I had this thing called the Courier Speech, so it wasn't like a screen reader, but it was one of them where you can just type in a few words and it speaks what you type. Yeah, in those days, there was no accessible and things. You just had to get someone sighted, look at the screen and read things to you, and you just had to touch type and just, hope for the best.
Let's move things on a bit. So, what is your favorite piece of assistive technology? It can be your first, it can be what you currently, what would you say is one of your favorites?
The biggest thing, and what I would say made opened a lot of doors for me, is the voiceover on the iPhone. But then, in particular, when you look at other technologies, the tiles, have you got this? Have you come across
They're
tiles?
fantastic, they are,
Oh,
or just
beautiful,
general item
beautiful.
trackers in general.
Oh yeah. I have a lab, but it's quite big. It's like I would say about 50 meters by about 100 meters in size, and I've got all this kind of tech and computers, and that's my lab basically. Yeah, and I have this one favorite screwdriver, and I can put it anywhere, and then I, in panic because I have to have that screwdriver, and that screwdriver opens any computer. It's got, I think, 250 bits to it. Yeah, it's the king of all screwdrivers, right? And I often lose it. So now I've got one of these tiles kind of connected to it or wrapped to it, and then and I just use my tile, and it just finds it. And the wallet is the other thing. You can never find your wallet when you need it. You got someone to pay on the phone. You want your card. Where's the wallet? Right? With this thing, it's just amazing. So tiles, yeah, absolutely A1 for tiles.
So let's talk about present now. Move on to the present, and what I want to ask you is, what piece of either, and I'm gonna expand this. What it could either be assistive technology or general technology, or you can do one for each. What technology, assistive or general, or both, is currently making a difference in your life?
NVDA is a massive thing for me. I used to be a JAWS user. I gave up JAWS about 10 years ago now. I discovered NVDA in those days, was in its very infancy. But one thing it could do that JAWS could not do. Now, I'm in the tech world, right? So I need to be able to log on and connect to routers, network routers, and to be able to configure them. And so to do that, you use what do you call a terminal service? You use something like SSH or Telnet. And JAWS would not work with SSH remote session. But NVDA, out of the box, I tried it straight away, just worked. Didn't need nothing. And it's ever worked since then. And I use it for, oh my gosh, I use it for so many things. I even contribute to its development. But the other thing is that, it's extra modules that you can have plug in. People can write and contribute to that, and that's it's just amazing. It's such a scalable, such a amazing platform, and it's the very first that goes to this analogous of freeware, right? It's free for blind people to use. It doesn't cost anything. And that is the first one of its tech. I mean, you name me any other tech for blind people that have taken that thingy. So the way I see it is that tech needs absolute all of our support because, at the end of the day, it's totally free, and it came along. I think JAWS had maybe 8, 9 years of head start on NVDA, but yet look how NVDA is now is and how it's capable, and some of the things NVDA can do now, I think it's kind of left JAWS in the dark ages, because there are things that NVDA can do that JAWS just cannot do. So I love NVDA. I'm an absolute advocate of NVDA. There's not a bad thing I've got to say about NVDA. It's just amazing. The whole concept, the whole project, the whole co the concept of all these contributors are coming to contribute, not getting paid anything for it, and they're doing it. Why? Because they want that blind person out there in the world, maybe in a third world country, who cannot afford, £1,000, £800 a year license fee, and it's for them. Have you come across something called Plaid?
Yes, I have heard it, and I've got one of their devices.
Is so amazing, right? You can have a conversation, and like me and you are having a conversation. In fact, I should have done it on this one, and I could have sent it to you. So you record it, and then it's got its own thing on the app. You say you wanted to kind of do the text translation thing that it does, the AI stuff, and then it will basically take that conversation, and it will literally make it into like a report. Or you can choose all these different styles of templates, so you can have it like a report, or you could have it like an interview. So in our case, say you'd set it as an interview, so it then kind of lays out in the right kind of way for you, and it's fantastic. It just works, and it works really, 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 really well. I mean, these days, when I have meetings and I'm chairing the meeting, yeah, I don't bother taking notes. I just use that thing, and it gives me the text. And obviously, like anything, you have to add your Midas touch to it, yeah. On the output to make it your personal thing, and then that's it. So any meeting, even if it's a 1 hour meeting that I've been chairing, right, within 2 minutes, 3 minutes of meeting finishing, I can get my meeting minutes out. All the people go, wow, how the hell do you do that? Secret. Yeah, it's really cool.
Well, moving on now to this question, a little bit back into the past. So if there's one piece of assistive technology, let's say, or mainstream technology again, that you'd like to see revived, could make a comeback, what would it be?
The good old Alexander style dial phone. Have you seen one of them?
I
Have
don't
you come
think
across?
so.
You've never come across like a proper old style dial phone. Oh my gosh, right. So, in the early days, dial phones. When I say early days, I mean they used to be in the 80s. I think in the 90s they kind of started disappearing, yeah. But what you had is you didn't have this like a digital number pad, right? You had this like a dial. It was like a wheel, yeah, with the
Yeah, I think
numbers
I've
on
heard of
it.
them. I just never used one.
Oh, you've never used it, yeah? And literally, you put the there's it's a wheel thing, right? And it's got like a holes where the numbers are on the edge, yeah. So you just stick your finger in whichever number you want to dial. So let's say zero, and then you twist it all the way around, and then you let go, and it dials the number, and it spins back like, and the clicks on it makes dials that particular number, and then so like there you just you know, I don't know, it's just something about those phone. I just love that style of phone that was there from when phone first came out. So it's the kind of nostalgic, the good old way how it was done, when the phone communication started, really. So that's why I'm really fond of it. I think it's really cool, and that's one of the first phones that I tend to use modified, to be able to connect to the very very early days of the internet. They used to be called BBSs in those days, bulletin board systems. So yeah, got a lot of fond memory of that when I was a kid, and I have one of them back.
And to finish off, it's a question you can let your imagination run absolutely wild with this question, and I love it because you can really get into a lot. So, what would you? It's a simple question. What would you like to see tech do in the future?
AI is really changing the world because, even the programming, right? For example, my degree was in programming and computing. Except I went into telecom simply because when I graduated at that time, there was a lot of this visual programming languages coming up, and the visual programming languages tend to use these IDEs, and they were non-speaking. They just didn't talk in those days, yeah. So I thought to myself, well, if I go into computing, I might find it a bit difficult because I won't be able to use the latest and greatest computing programming technologies because they're not accessible. So as a result of that, I diversified and went to telecoms. But what do you call it? So programming and this in this day and age, right? If you're blind and stuff, again, with AI, it's on a level footing because you don't need to be able to see the thing. You just describe in prompts like what you need, and you can write amazing programs or do anything, yeah. I mean, most people just use Chat GPT to write letters or love poems or what have you, but myself, yeah, I've actually got it to write me like a 3,000 lines program, which I've actually commercialized since then, and I sell it. I charge £150 to clients for using this program service, right? And this was done using ChatGPT without me writing a single line of code. So, this kind of AI stuff, right, is absolutely fascinating, really, with AI by your side. There are plenty of things that we can do without being able to see and be absolutely competitive with the sighted world.
Fantastic. Well, it's always a pleasure to explore a tech timeline with a fellow techie. So thank you very much, Mo Valley, for sharing with us your tech timeline here on RNIB Tech Talk. Time now on Tech Talk to talk beta testing. Yes, so we've done this last year and we quite enjoyed the experience. Hopefully you did as well. So this year it is once again the return of the beta males. Yes, and I am talking, of course, about beta testing of software. So before we kind of go into exactly what we're doing today, beta testing does refer to basically testing early public versions of, in this case, the iOS slash iPadOS operating system for Apple smartphones and tablets. So Apple basically let users test the software early, spot bugs and issues and things like that, and report them in hopes that the final version, which is coming out in September, is going to be very, very polished and hopefully as bug-free as possible, although there is always going to be bugs with these things. So if you want to take up beta testing, you can, but I'll tell you how to do that at the end. Joining me is my fellow beta male, more brave a beta male because he tests it much earlier than I, Mr. David Hogg.
Hello, we're back again.
Back again indeed. I thought it was quite fun last time, so yeah, we're doing it again. So you've tested, did you test it for all your Apple devices? Which devices were you testing and operating systems for this year?
Again, as we said last year, nobody should do what I do. So I started from developer beta 1, going on my iPhone 16 Plus. I've got a Apple Watch SE Series 3, the most recent SE. I've put the Watch OS beta on that. And I also put the Mac OS Golden Gate beta on my M1 Mac Mini. So it's been a long couple of months of my battery going down really quickly and my device is getting very hot.
Have you had the experience you mentioned to me a few years ago where you couldn't make phone calls on your very expensive phone?
Fortunately not. That was back in iOS 13, I believe. So whatever year that was. No, this beta cycle, at least on iOS, has been pretty smooth. The last few years have been pretty smooth on the iOS side. macOS, though, was pretty rough. But on the whole, with iOS and watchOS, they're pretty stable, especially now that the public betas are out.
Yeah, I always somehow find public betas a bit more trustworthy when it comes to testing because they would have already gone through a few weeks of testing with people who, you know, are a bit more maybe tech advanced, but also developers and Apple themselves. So before we dive into my favorite features, what were some of your favorite features of iOS and iPadOS 27?
Kind of the main thing about WWDC that they were saying was, we've made this 20% faster, we've made this 50% faster, and so on. Just little, like, spring cleaning things. I think after the big, massive update of iOS 26 last year, moving into 27, a lot of just quality of life upgrades to make the operating system be much, much faster. The, forgive me, I can't remember the name of the feature, but the switching from mobile data to Wi-Fi being a bit more seamless than it was before is really good. And of course, all the AI stuff as well that was promised back in 2024, a lot of that seems to be coming to fruition now.
Whenever they kind of say, you know, oh, we've made this faster and or all this, I'm always a bit skeptical. I'm always saying, like, I'll believe it when I see it. And more often than not, they actually make it quite successful. I remember that happened with iOS 10 back in the day, where they actually just did a polish and a cleanup. Same with iOS 9. All of these things kind of cleared things up a bit and made performances a little bit better. And that's kind of what I've noticed as well. Everything's a bit snappier from the general device performance. When it comes to voiceover, I'll go into it a bit later, but we do need to tackle the whole AI stuff because it's been talked about throughout the last 2 years because Apple promised it in 2024, which turned out to be a big mistake because that was used as a stick to beat them with for the next 2 years that they, you know, have taken to actually deliver it. And there's two ways of looking at it. One way you're kind of going, maybe you shouldn't have said anything, or the other reason, or the other way to look at it, which is kind of what I'm leaning towards, because I've played with these AI features. Actually, if what we've got is what taken 2 years, then I'm actually quite pleased so far. What are your thoughts on kind of the AI stuff that Apple have added?
I mean, I kind of am somewhere in the middle of your two viewpoints. I think when it was promised back in 24, the stuff that was shown on screen was not a demo and was not physically possible when they showed it off at part of WWDC, which was wild. At WW this year, they made a real point to make sure that everything was shown as a live demo and everything you could, if you were watching it, you could see a developer's finger and then what would happen on screen. So they made a real effort to show that this was actually happening. My main thoughts on Siri AI is, if this had come out in 2024, this would be amazing. but in the AI landscape that we're now in of command line interfaces and your codecs and your Claude code, Siri AI does a very good job of being a basic chatbot. But if you're wanting more agentic stuff to be happening on your device building Python scripts or anything, then it's not going to be amazing at that. And it's worth noting that it is in beta now, and I think it's going to be in beta when it comes out in September. So it's going to be interesting to see how Apple make changes to the model over time, whether they tie it to their annual software updates or whether they just push them out as and when remains to be seen.
I think when it comes to, though, Siri AI, you know, some of these AIs like, you know, Geminis, your Claudes and stuff like that, they are designed to be capable of more complex tasks, like you mentioned, the Python stuff and things like that. And I'm not saying majority of Apple users will not want that, but I think Apple's priority is that the kind of basic stuff is covered first before they kind of look into maybe allowing this chatbot to be a little bit more techie for those that will want to use it for these sorts of purposes, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's worth noting that Apple is using a bit of Gemini for their back-end model. Whether they decide that they want to let that loose eventually on people's Macs and be a bit more agentic and creating things and running things, that remains to be seen. But yeah, like as a basic chatbot, which I think the vast majority of people are using the likes of ChatGPT and Claude 4 and Gemini as well, this is a pretty decent competitor. And the fact that it's going to be on people's phones as well, just rather than having to download something and sign into something, is going to be a big, big boon for Apple. This is the Siri that we wanted. You know, the kind of various different voice assistants that we've had over the years, Siri has always been lagging behind for going on, what, 15 years now? Is it 2011 that it came into being? This is now the Siri that we wanted. It can properly answer questions. You know, you can ask it now about the Rangers results without it defaulting to the Texas Rangers. Yeah, it's the best version of Siri that there's been.
Do you think from the basic angle, do you think this voice assistant is on par with the other ones out there?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not the biggest user of the Amazon one, that I won't say its name in case it sets off people's devices. I've never really used it much. I have used the Google one. And I mean, I basically use that as a glorified timer, but it does the job. So it's up to standard now with the options from Amazon and from Google as well, after so long.
I've only started using it, so because I still mainly use Gemini for a lot of things, but I'm keen to start slowly, I wouldn't say switching, because I need to see if it can do what Gemini's done for me, but I want to slowly start doing that and see how we can handle these things, and if it can do things as well as Gemini for me, for my use case at least anyway. And there are some agentic features that it can do based on what's displayed on your screen, which again I need to test out, because I'm curious how well it will do with that sort of thing, where I can show it an appointment in my email on the screen and go, see this, can you do what needs to be done with it, you know, that sort of thing. I want to give a quick mention to accessibility, because for me, I use obviously VoiceOver and things like that. And what's jumped out for me, with AI side at least anyway, is the image recognitions and image descriptions. So up until this point, a lot of blind and partially sighted users had to use apps such as Seeing AI, such as Be My AI from Be My Eyes, or, you know, even some people use Gemini to get their image descriptions, or PikiBot. And all of these are great, and I think they are fantastic and still very much do things in a way that I like, and I still tend to use Be My AI a lot, for example. However, the way you can now get Apple's Siri AI to generate image descriptions is a game changer to me, because they can happen on the fly. You don't need to tap on a photo, then find the share sheet, then find which app you want to use to describe it, and then wait for it to do it. You can't. It's, they've taken out a lot of steps. So, for example, yesterday I was browsing through my photos and I found a photo. I swiped down with one finger and one of the actions was generate detailed AI image description. I double tapped and in seconds that description was there. I didn't have to go through 5,000 steps. I could then swipe down again and save that description so that the next time I'm browsing through my photos, that description actually stays there without me having to regenerate it or dig for it, which I thought was fantastic. But the other game changer for me was when browsing social media, where if I find a photo on a social media app, I can do exactly the same, swipe down and hit, find an action that says generate an AI image description, and it will generate the description. I don't have to export the photo to another app to do it. I don't need to find the share sheet. So again, few less steps. And if there's one accessibility improvement that jumps out at me, it's that. There are other improvements I've heard people mention, including using the live visual description, basically where you can actually use the phone's camera and it will describe live to you what's going on in certain ways to certain extents that I haven't yet played with. So that's something I may demonstrate and look into when iOS 27 officially comes out. But these are just a few, just one big accessibility thing for me that's jumped out at me from my limited testing. I know you don't use accessibility features that much, but yeah. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, it's interesting there that you mentioned just the not having to put your photo into another app and then scan it through there and all that. I think that's one of the benefits of Siri AI being local to device for the most part and only going up to private cloud compute if it really needs to, is the snappiness of that whole setup that you mentioned there. And yeah, just it being on device local just makes it so much easier. Probably not one of the things that they were going for when they made it all on device, but a lovely, lovely benefit.
I do think the privacy and on device stuff as well is crucial, because one of the things that a lot of users are mentioning about these, you know, AI engines and things like that is the fact that actually they are concerned, you know, where does all that information go to? You know, there's always warning saying, look, treat your AI as a stranger on a park bench and don't give it anything you wouldn't give to said stranger. And I think that privacy element will reassure a lot of users a bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's worth noting that the information is still, you know, going to Apple, at least when it's not being kept properly on device, like your health data or something like that. That's all kept on device. And if you've got send diagnostics turned off, there's a setting buried in somewhere to do that. But yeah, they've been shouting about their privacy for a long, long time, and it's good to see that still being front of mind.
I have only tested this on my phone at the time. You've also tested, you know, other operating systems. Is there anything that jumps out of you from testing the watch or other devices that you want to mention?
The slider for liquid glass is wild. You can set it all the way to the left and have it be completely transparent, which this vision is not good for. So I'm have it a wee bit more transparent than it was, just as transparent as I can have it and still use my phone comfortably. But the choice of that was really nice.
Yeah, I think the liquid glass is important to note for the partially sighted listeners, because that can be, as we've heard, visually quite challenging. For me, the one thing I still want to try, because it's been bugging me for years since they released the Shortcuts app, is natural language for shortcuts, because I found this app so complicated at first, and I think for basic users this app is simply too complicated. To now be able to create shortcuts to do certain actions quicker or certain automations, in other words, if something happens, something else will happen as a result. You know, you can do this by natural language, which I think for me is long, long, long overdue. I'm looking forward to taking advantage of that.
It's pretty great. I've got a shortcut that tied to my action button that puts my phone into Do Not Disturb and starts a timer in the wonderful book tracking app, Book Tracker. I didn't know how to get out of that state and have the timer stop when I press the button again. So I just put into the describe a shortcut thing for it. Can you find a way to stop the timer? Say, for example, it detects that do not disturb mode is on, stop the timer, and then stop do not disturb. I could have figured that out on my own. It would have taken me about 5-10 minutes, but just being able to type that into the prompting window and have it appear was brilliant.
Now, if there's one thing you're still looking forward to trying that you haven't tried yet, what would it be?
I think I'm really looking forward to getting entrenched in Siri AI once that comes out proper, once it's all right on the Mac and all the kind of personal context stuff comes in. I'm excited to see what that can do. I have no idea. As somebody who's been using ChatGPT and recently dipped my toe into Codex, I'm looking forward to seeing what Siri AI can do, what its limitations are. And yeah, we'll go from there.
One improvement that you would like to see before the official version comes out, what would you like to see?
It's, as always, battery life. The battery life starts off pretty bad, and then it gets slowly better and better as the betas go on. So I'm on developer beta 5 now, so it should slowly creep up as we get closer and closer to September.
One improvement for me, I'm noticing a few interesting instances with VoiceOver where it ducks itself and also other audio ducks sometimes a bit where it doesn't need to. So I had the moments where VoiceOver saying something, then it will suddenly duck itself, turn itself down and turn itself back up again, so you could miss the things it says. I've not found any major bugs so far, apart from the weird quality of VoiceOver speech itself. However, I wouldn't class that as a showstopper. It doesn't make it unusable. And I think that's the other thing. There's not many showstopper bugs like they were last year. I know last year some betas had it where if you updated and your phone restarted, you would need sighted assistance to unlock your device for the first time. If you do want to do the public beta, few things to note before you do it. You are doing this at your own risk. So if you're not confident to do it or not comfortable, then simply don't. But if you do, do remember to back up your devices. Also remember to do it preferably on a secondary device rather than your primary device. If you are unsure, if anything breaks, you don't want that happening to your primary device that you are using. So do consider that as well. And as always, do just be careful in general. These are beta versions for a reason. If you are giving it a go, tell us what you think and your own observations. And we can even get you on Tech Talk to join the beta mails. If you would like us to test anything, if you've got any questions about the upcoming operating systems, and we can maybe do some testing to help you answer them, do let us know as well. That magic email address as always, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. But for now, David Hogg, thank you very much for joining me for our beta mails chat here on RNIB Tech Talk.
Thank you. Speak to you next year.
And just like that, that is it for another episode of Tech Talk. Thank you very much for joining us. And as always, I hope you've enjoyed it. And tune in next week, of course, as well. And as always, a quick reminder, if you do want to get in touch and comment on something you've heard, ask a question, or maybe you want us to demonstrate something or talk to someone specifically or just investigate something, let us know as well. We can always look into it. So do let us know. Of course, that email address you need, as always, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, and we'll get on it. We'll see what you've got to say. However, that is it for the show this week. We'll be back next week. From myself, Hubert Pavelkovic, Natalie Curran, and Jackie Brown. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.